I'm sorry I was late. I've had a few travel scrapes today. So this reading is dedicated to Tony at Manchester Piccadilly, who let me go on the train, even though I missed my train. I finished writing this book quite a while ago, so I've only started reading it again, and so I'm only going to read bits from the beginning of the book. But I wanted to share a poem from Lee Yong Lee's The City in Which I Love You first, because this great poem, it's called A Story, and stories, I'm in love with stories, which is why I write. And anyway, I'll read the poem. Sad is the man who is asked for a story and can't come up with one. His five-year-old son waits in his lap. Not the same story, Baba, a new one. The man rubs his chin, scratches his ear. In a room full of books, in a world of stories, he can't recall, not one. And soon he thinks the boy will give up on his father. Already the man lives far ahead. He sees the day his boy will go. He sees the boy, the day his boy will go. Don't go. Hear the alligator story, the angel story once more. You love the spider story. You laugh at the spider. Let me tell it. But the boy is packing his shirts. He's looking for his keys. Are you a god, the man screams, that I sit mute before you? Am I a god that I should never disappoint? But the boy is here. Please, Baba, a story. It is an emotional rather than a logical equation, an earthly rather than a heavenly one, which posits that a boy's supplications and a father's love add up to silence. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. The story revolves around some remains, so I will take you to the remains. Should I give context? No, I won't. I'll just read. The mouth of Kofi Atta's hut was untidy. There was a heap of bidet near his fireplace and a broken water pot by the door. The obsidian from the water pot was lying under the keter like the lost eye of a giant bat. The Saji and the other policemen held their noses and looked at each other. I could see they were scared. Saji pointed at the keter and the tall red policeman raised it. I went inside and all the policemen, 119, came inside. None of them thought of holding the keter so the sun could come in. As for me, I didn't care. It was dark, but I could see. There was a little space in the grass in Kofi Atta's roof, so some flimsy sun was able to squeeze through like the deep, deep forest. I could smell old palm wine. Kofi Atta liked to store his palm wine until it became bitter and strong. There was something on Kofi Atta's keter, about the size of a newborn otri. Kai! Saji shouted. It stinks in here. He took out a flashlight. He took a flashlight out of his abomu and switched it on. And there all the policemen started shouting, Oh, Erade! Eh, Yesu! Asembeni! Which would have made me laugh because they were all speaking English before that. But it's true that what we saw is not something you see every day. Even I, Yaupoku. And when fear catches you, it returns you to screaming, your first language. The thin line on Kofi Atta's keter was quivering. It was black and shiny, but when the tall red policeman stepped closer, it was once more, about apim apim, thousands. They took off and the hut was filled with their buzzing. I ran towards the wall, but they surrounded the policemen who stamped around trying to brush them off. I turned and removed the cloth from Kofi Atta's window hole and all the once more left, except for one or two that kept hovering around. The sun entered the room and we all saw what was on the keter. It looked like sebi, a skinned adanko, but it had no bones, and it was red, like a woman's monthly troubles. It's a dead baby, said the tall red policeman. Saji shook his head. Another, dark, but not dark, with a gap between his teeth, said, This is not natural. Saji stepped back and put his hands in the back pockets of his jeans. All right, officers, let us not forget our duties. Mensa, the tall red one turned to him. Sir, cordon off this abode. He turned to me. Opeyinpoku, what do you know about this thing? Nothing, Saji, I told him, because truly, I was shocked. I was not meant to see what I saw, Sebi. No one without the right powers was supposed to see it. I knew I had to pour libation as soon as possible. All of this because of some woman in a short skirt with thin legs. Ah, the elders did not lie when they said one palm nut spoils the enjoyment of palm wine. I walked out of Koviata's hut and stood outside holding my head. Saji came outside with all the policemen, leaving the tall red one inside. He took a radio from his abomu and pushed something. Then he spoke. Inspector Danko, Sergeant Smita reporting. We suspect human remains, sir. We are not sure. With respect, we can't be sure, sir. We are not qualified. Sorry, sir. Yes, sir, we'll try harder. Of course, sir, we can get a pathologist. We'll try Koforidua. Sir, we will begin interrogation shortly. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll update you, sir. When he finished talking, he turned to the men. All right, I want you to split into three groups of two and question everyone, adult, man, woman, and child in this village. Men, sir, I want you to guard this hut. Gavu, wait here. The one with the gap between his teeth said, yes, sir, and the rest went towards the center of the village. Saji put his hand in the pocket of his shirt, removed some groundnuts, and started chewing. He turned to me. Yaopoku, you say you don't know anything about this. I looked at him. This young man who had left his training at home, who was calling me Yaopoku, who had forgotten that I was helping him. Now he wanted to be a big officer, so he was speaking to me in English. I wanted to tell him that you do not light a fire under a fruit-bearing tree. But these young people, they think they invented knowledge. So I ignored him. Do you know who lives here? He's called Kofiata. I started walking away. Saji chased me. Where are you going? To pour libation. He laughed and waved towards the mouth of Kofiata's hut. Gavu, let's move. We are going to Koforidua. After I reached the Chinubua tree, I saw one of the policemen shaking Asari, the farmer, with his wife and the children watching. These people, policemen, lawyers, ministers, they will never learn. Book law and gun power can never teach you how to deal with human beings. We have always had our own ways. Remember that the monkey was eaten long before the farmer was born. I shook my head and went to get my palm wine. And I'm going to read, it's told in two voices, so that voice is the hunter's voice, and the other is third-person voice, but it focuses on Keo, who's the forensic scientist, and I am going to skip and read, I guess, his first contact with the police, and then we'll take it from there. And who is checking time? You're going to let me know, yeah? This is all new to me. Not reading. Just thought I'd be clear. Clarity is important. Okay. Hello. Is that Odamtin? Yes. My name is Sergeant George Winter. I'm calling you on behalf of PRCC, PJ Donko, to assist in an investigation. Keo was momentarily stunned. Sorry, are you army or police? Police. Okay. He wrote police on his pad. Am I a suspect or a witness? The man on the other end laughed so hard that Keo heard his chair shift. A wooden chair in a hollow room. No, sir. If you were a suspect, we would have been there to arrest you already. Keo exhaled slowly. So how can I help? It seems you are a forensics man, and the PRCC has a case he wants your expertise for. Your services are required immediately. The irony of the situation brought a smile to Kale's lips. Less than a year ago, the Ghana police had turned down his job application because, in the words of the red-eyed officer who interviewed him, D.I. Barr, forensics was surplus to requirements. Yes, he appreciated that Kale had worked for a year as a scenes of crime officer with the West Midlands Police in England. Very admirable, but things were different here. The Ghana police had a 99% record in solving crimes through specialized interrogation. Keo cleared his throat. Do you know anything about the case? No, sir, but it's not Accra-based. It's in Sonokrom, in the hinterland, near Tafo. What kind of case is it? The PRCC wrote unclassified, sir. Keo wrote unclassified on his notepad and drew three arrows leading away from the word in a fan pattern. Under the arrows, he wrote abduction, theft, murder. Then he pulled his lower lip and wrote in small boxes, smuggling, trafficking, fraud. Hello. Yes, Sergeant. So what should I tell him? I'll have to ask my boss for some time off, said Kale, tapping his pen against the side of his face. I'll call you back. Oh, no, sir. I'll hold. It struck Kale that there was an element of coercion implicit in the sergeant's insistence on holding. It reminded him of those special offer adverts where the announcer said that the product was only on sale for a few hours. It made you feel as if somebody was watching you, waiting to see what you would do. He didn't want to be watched. It may take some time, he said. I'll hold. Kale knocked twice on Mr. Aqua's door and placed his hand against its gray frame. Enter. He walked in and stood by one of the two black leather chairs facing Mr. Aqua across his pale wood desk. Good morning, Mr. Aqua. Morning, sit down. Although he was in a hurry, Kale settled in a chair and placed his palms on the desk. Mr. Aqua didn't like it when people stood when he was talking to them. Kale suspected it was because it made his scattered bald patches stand out. Thank you. How are things? Fine. Any problems in the lab? No. You need to borrow some money. Kale smiled. Mr. Aqua seemed to think that anyone who spoke to him for more than 2 minutes wanted money. No, Mr. Aqua. Kale extended his legs beneath the desk and accidentally kicked Mr. Aqua's shin. Sorry. Mr. Aqua waved a hand impatiently and glanced at his phone. Kale, your mission. Oh, yes. I have been approached by the Ghana police to help them with some work, so I've come to ask if it's possible for me to have some time off. Mr. Aqua shook his head. If the Ghana police need our services, they must follow procedure. They should speak to me. Mr. Aqua thumped his chest as though he was trying to dislodge the rising rasp in his voice. I am the proprietor of this establishment. Kale held a hand over his mouth and sighed. Mr. Aqua, they need my services as a forensic scientist, and forensics is not one of the services you offer. I'm just asking for a few days. Mr. Aqua walked to a small fridge in the left corner of his office, extracted a half-drunk bottle of Pepsi, took a swig, and replaced it. Mr. Aqua's thrift with a drink reminded Kale of the first time he had had a Pepsi. He was 11 and had just managed to get a scholarship to go to Presby Boys Secondary School. His father brought the bottle home and they had all had some, all of them. His mother, his father, his four-year-old sister and two-year-old brother, and himself. And his mother still managed to save some for the next day. Kale felt a familiar pang of longing as Mr. Aqua closed the fridge. Mr. Aqua sat back at his desk. Who are you talking to at Ghana Police? Sergeant Minta. A sergeant? Ah, Kale, you think I'm paying you so that any minnow from nowhere can call you from your job at any time? Have you read your contract? Yes. I know I'm not entitled to any holidays until after 12 months of work. That's why I'm asking you. You read the part about conflict of interest. Mr. Aqua, there is no conflict of interest. Forensics is not your business. I'm simply asking for a few days. Kale clenched his fist beneath the desk to stay calm. Mr. Aqua stood up. Hey, my friend, watch your tone. He pulled up his dark blue trousers and buttoned his lab coat. Remember who pays your salary. If you want to speak to me, you better humble yourself. Tell Sergeant whatever to call me and then we'll discuss this matter. So I'll skip from there. How am I doing for time? Another five. Ooh. Okay, so let's go skip a little bit. To 33. So I've only got to page 100. I haven't marked stuff, so. Okay, so I'll stay with Kale and do the beginning of his day. Kale started his car before he noticed the crack in the windscreen. It ran from the top left edge of the glass halfway down towards the base of his wipers as though on a journey it never finished. He got out and walked around the car. There was no other visible sign of damage. It was obvious what had happened. With the mangoes on their tree in season, the dark green maze of the tree's leaves had become a beacon to all the children in Yamashi. Since the Odamtin house was without walls, there was no stopping ardent boys from attacking the ripe orange fruits with missiles. A wayward stone must have landed on his car. Kale shrugged and walked back to the driver's side. This was not a place where insurance would cover him. Besides, it was a small blemish. The car was for driving, not for show. Having spent the night agonizing over his missed opportunity with the police, he had finally decided that he was better off staying at Aquabio. If the police really wanted him, they would have to process his job application and offer him an actual job, not some random unclassified case. Yes, he wanted to work as a forensic scientist, but not on a one-off case that would lead nowhere. He was more concerned about the systemic approach of the police. Forensics should be a key part of law enforcement. Regardless, he found himself cringing at the thought of all that evidence taken away at the crime scene. He shrugged again as he eased into the car. As he did so, he spotted the ripe mango by his trailing left foot and bent to pick it up. He smiled. It wasn't such a bad day after all. The engine responded as soon as he turned the key and reversed onto the dusty road beside their home that ran 50 meters towards the sea, where the coast road began. Carol liked to use the coast road in the morning. It made him feel connected to his family. His father went out to sea after Keo went to bed and returned to land in the morning with the catch of the day. Keo's mother and the other fish sellers waited on the shore for the fishermen to pull their nets in, and then got to work separating the fish into species and sizes for sale. It was a familiar routine. During his school holidays, he used to go out with his mother early in the morning and help his father's team of fishermen pull their nets in. He remembered the chants the men sang, the way the sun rose slow, as though it was tied to the ends of the nets they were pulling, then cast a brilliant peach glow across the surface as it gained shape. If you looked to the side, you could see the light glance of the large aluminium basins that the fish sellers used. The pale glints flashed like winks from the horizon. Keo listened to the hum of his engine as he changed gears and sped down the coast. He had considered buying an in-car stereo, but it wasn't a priority for him. His younger brother, Kakra, would soon finish his national service assignment and start university. That meant he would be paying accommodation costs for both of his siblings. Thankfully, his sister only had another year of study to complete. He pulled into the Aquabio car park, reached into the glove compartment for his mobile phone, and alighted. Joseph was the only technician in at 7:30 a.m. And as Keo said good morning to him, he made a mental note to recommend him for a pay rise. In fact, he would ask for a pay rise himself. He had had enough of being taken for granted. Should I stop there? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We can still Q&A.